Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Active Quest. This is episode 33. Wow, that's a palindrome. I like those. I'm your host, Joseph Yaden. Joining me today is Chris Penwell, Mr. Chris, or Mr. Penwell.
Hey, I'm back.
Yes, back from the dead. We've got a lot to unpack with the show, but before we do all that, how are you, Chris? How are things?
I'm good. It's been a bit busy with work, but other than that, it's been great.
Tell the listeners what's going on with your schedule so they're aware.
What we're trying to do, we're trying to figure out a recording schedule right now where I'm working Sundays and I can't really get off the weekends too often. Like, for the next 3 weeks, I should be available. It's been a bit tricky just trying to switch shifts and drop shifts and my fellow co-workers and over the most recent weeks I've been able to do that, but yeah, it's just not a consistent thing right now, so we're just trying to figure that out behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I think we've got it down. Like, I think we'll probably get it down to where we have another day where we can all three be available. My schedule's crazy. Josh's schedule is, I guess, not crazy, but
you it can know. Be crazy though. Like, the amount of work hours that guy works, my god.
Yeah, that's true. It can be crazy. and then you just got this new job, so you're adjusting to that. So
yeah,
thanks everybody for your patience. We'll get it all worked out so that we're all three on the show.
And you might get it again sooner as well.
Yeah, because normally we like to post maybe around Tuesday, Wednesday ish, but yeah, we may be able to make it so that you get it sooner. So that's that out of the way. Again, this is episode 33. A couple things to note before getting into the run of show and what we're going to cover on this episode. We have kind of a big announcement here, and that is that ActiveQuest has joined the Handsome Phantom Network, which I'm not sure if you guys are aware, but there's the Indie Incursion podcast, a couple other podcasts that are run by Handsome Phantom, which they're a publication. And yeah, it's just sort of an amalgamation, I guess, of these awesome video game podcasts, and having them all together can be lucrative for the podcasters as well as the listeners. It's kind of a way to get exposed to more content and stuff. As the listener, not much is going to change. We're not going to change the format of the show. We're not going to change the content of the show. Nothing like that. Nothing's behind a paywall. But basically the only difference to you guys is that we're going to have ads in the show now, which I know, I know that's, you know, obviously nobody wants to listen to ads, but they're going to be really short, and they're not going to be ads for, like, you know, hey, have you guys heard of Windex? It's not going to be like, or whatever, you know, it's not going to be like
tryhoney.com.
Yeah. It's not going to be anything like ads. It's not going to be anything like that. From what I understand, and we're still kind of working this through, we just basically started with this. They're going to be, from what I understand, they're going to be ads for the other shows. So
yeah,
it'll already be something that you're into or kind of in that realm anyway. Like, I know some podcast, like, what's the, there's like the IGN shows that do four hymns or whatever. I don't know. I just, like, I guess I can see kind of the Venn diagram there, but really, I mean, this will be relevant stuff. So hopefully that doesn't put a damper on anything. They're going to be quick, so no worries on that. But yeah, other than that, nothing else will change. It'll just be sort of a little community that we're running. So I wanted to make that announcement, and I'm pretty happy about it. Okay, so in terms of episode 33, there's a lot to unpack this week. We've got some, well, obviously the shootings that happened about a week ago now, have really impacted, like, the video game world, which maybe they shouldn't. And so there's a couple stories with that I wanted to get into. Let's see. We're going to talk about Sony, Nintendo, and Microsoft requiring all publishers to disclose loot box odds, which I think that's a win in the gamer's book.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As you guys know, Ninja has moved over to Mixer, and there was an impressive and quickly earned milestone for that I wanted to just touch on. And along with that, there was an interesting Borderlands 3 YouTuber who had allegedly leaked out all this information that Take-Two had been investigating for about 10 months. So that's another thing we'll get into. And then we'll talk about the new Call of Duty game, because that game, I feel like, has been in the news almost every week with a new controversy. We've got some listener questions, which thank you guys for that. If you're unaware of how that works, every Friday we post up a thread on our Twitter page, which is at ActiveQuestShow on Twitter. And you know, you can just submit whatever questions relevant to that show or not. You could ask us what our favorite type of hamburgers are or whatever. I don't care.
You don't have to wait for the thread to come out. You could just send us questions whenever you'd like.
That's actually a great point. I hadn't really thought of that. Yeah. But yeah, anytime, just, yeah, you can add us on Twitter. And assuming it's not offensive or whatever, we'll read it on the show. It doesn't have to be video game related, but we'd like it to be, I guess, since we're a video
game. I'd love to answer questions about what's my favorite cereal and...
oh, man.
What's your favorite LaCroix and all that kind of stuff? My answer to that already is apricot.
Apricot, sure. Speaking of cereals, Kennedy and I have been turned on to this... churro cereal. Churro. Are you familiar? You know the churro.
You Americans are crazy. Yeah. you guys are nuts. Seeing these cookies and cream kind of like cereals. I'm seeing, maple bacon donut flavor. I'm like, what the heck is going on?
Over there. Churro. Let's look up what a churro actually is, because I don't. It's like a cinnamon. Okay,
it's a Mexican pastry. Yeah.
Yep. A churro is a fried dough pastry, predominantly choux. I don't know what that means. Based snack. Churros are traditional in Spain and Portugal, from where they originate, as well as the Philippines and Ibero-America. Anyway, it's just a it's like a ball of sugar and bread. Anyway, there's this new cereal out that we've just been in love with. So. I just wanted to let the listeners know about that. And then we'll close the show with what we've been playing. The selection of games we have here between the two of us, Chris, are very...
pretty bass.
What? Yeah. No. What do you mean pretty bad? No, I think these
pretty
games...
pretty badass.
Are... badass. Badass. Sorry.
Badass.
Badass. I didn't hear the ass. Yes. Yeah. Badass. Other than maybe one that you're playing, unfortunately. But... but yeah, we'll get into that. Cool. Chris, I've talked long enough. Let's get into some news, shall we?
Let's do this.
All right. Let me take a swig of my LaCroix, which I'm so sorry, everybody. I fucked it up. Might as well cancel the episode. I opened the LaCroix prior to hitting the record button, which it's just an instinctual thing. I mean, I pulled the LaCroix out of the fridge and I just popped it open. And then immediately I was like, God damn it.
Oh, no.
I was like, do I get another one? Well, no, because then this one will just sit and then get flat, and then I'll be all... my LaCroix schedule will all be messed up.
Let's simulate it. There it is.
There it is. Oh, it got all over the monitor. Okay.
Oh, no.
Okay. So, let's start this first story here. This is from Game Informer. I'm not going to read through the whole thing. But Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo will start requiring developers to disclose loot box odds. There was a panel workshop hosted by the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, and the ESA, the Entertainment Software Association. And it was essentially to discuss loot boxes, and I guess they voted on this new initiative where, the platform holders, or, you know, Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, have to have their publishers, who are putting games out on their platforms, disclose the odds of loot boxes. Now, one thing to note is that this is starting to roll out, like, in the near future, and by 2020, all platforms should be on board with this. And obviously, if the platform, or if the publisher does not agree to do so, then I guess they won't be able to publish games on that platform. Chris, what do you make of this?
It's a great development, I believe. You know, it's more transparency in the industry with how these products are being sold and what your odds to get all these rewards for the loot boxes. And it's actually interesting because China did this a few years ago, I believe. Which is interesting. Yeah, and they did it with games like Overwatch and things like that. So it's great to see that come over here, and so people know exactly what their odds are of getting these legendary items and such.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Now, I guess question, it's not really a concern, it's a question, is how will this be implemented? Like, does the audience straight up just see, like, a percentage next to whatever item it is? Like,
That's what I think is going to happen, yeah. Because I think Kingdom Hearts did this with the mobile game, that they showed the percentage of, like, okay, this is your odds of getting this card over another or whatever. And I think I've seen the same in other titles too.
I think from the consumer point of view, there's basically no downside to this. Now, a couple things I wanted to bring up. One, I don't really want to get too far in the weeds of this, but I just quickly, do you think that this sort of loot box thing and all these, like, in-game purchases where you don't know what you're going to get are considered gambling? Do you think that's a form of gambling?
I think so. You're not using real money for it, but you're using time and...
You can use real money.
Yeah, exactly, but you can't get rewards out of it, like money rewards.
That's different from
real gambling, but at the same time, I feel like you're gambling time, your gambling experience in the game, and that can be incredibly addictive for some people. I think some seasons of games, like... the summer sports season for Overwatch can be really bad for people because they're trying to grind these rewards quickly before the time ends, right? So that can be very addictive, and it can be, you know, it can be harmful for someone's health, or, you know,
yeah, fair.
You know, depending on how addictive the game is for them.
Fair enough. Yeah, that could be. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it too much, but my other concern, I guess, is say, okay, this goes through and people just, like, what if there's, like, a just massive decline in loot box purchases, and the publishers are, like, losing money or whatever. I wonder what will happen. I wonder what will, well, I don't, I don't know that it is. I mean, if a publisher isn't making any money, then that might impact whether or not they make more games or, you know, put more games into development. I don't know. I don't know how much these loot boxes make for them, if it's, like, their main source of income. Like, I just have a lot of questions about it from the business perspective.
For sure, but they can be very predatory as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, for example, like, a FIFA, like, Jim Sterling mentioned this earlier, but the FIFA games are free plus and over. And yet they have gambling kind of, like, mechanics with the Ultimate Team card packs, right? And things like that. And there's YouTube videos out there where people are opening these packs, and it's super popular because they want to see the streamer or the influencer get a particular card, right? A legendary card or whatever. So
right. It's
kind of that. And also Fortnite... the kids have been bullied for not having specific items and stuff. So that's also a very bad thing for the industry to have, I think. So, and, you know, the video game industry is getting way more and more exposure to microtransactions and stuff like this. And I think that's a negative kind of, like, view of our video games and the companies behind them. So I think, honestly, the microtransactions are kind of a bad thing. But at the same time, yeah, like, it does support future contents like Star Wars Battlefront 2. They don't have any DLC or anything like that, really. It's all supported by the loot boxes and the microtransaction stuff, and that's how we're getting new maps and new characters for free, right? So do we return back to that DLC format again, splitting apart communities, or do we have that microtransaction model, or do you think there's a completely new way to sell these games?
Yeah, I mean, like our show is doing, they could put ads in video games. That would be kind of weird.
That'd be rough, though. Like, that had a really negative backlash with an NBA, 2K.
You know how, I mean, they could get creative with it. One thing that I really thought was interesting was in, and I think maybe I talked about this before on another episode, but while playing Rainbow Six Vegas, there are lots of sections where you're just like walking around the streets of Vegas, and there are these like billboards and bus signs with ads on them. I think the ads themselves were like fake or whatever, like, you know, they were like satire or whatever. But I think implementing like maybe a real ad onto a bus sign or like a billboard in a game like that might work. I think if you
Burnout Paradise did that with the Obama campaign. Remember that?
No, I don't, but that sounds really funny.
They put billboards of Obama's campaign for the presidency in the game, so at least with something
like that, it doesn't really like interrupt your gameplay, and it doesn't, you know, you don't have to whip out your credit card.
No, but at the same time, it could take you out of the game itself, the game
that's
world.
True,
like,
that's
I wouldn't want to see ads in like Last of Us or Assassin's Creed or something like that, you know.
Oh, how would that even work with Assassin's Creed?
I have no idea. But like another example of the of ads not working is in Street Fighter, right? Where they the Street Fighter costumes, and you got fight money, the in-game currency of that game, for showing the ads. Didn't really work out in Capcom's favor either. So yeah, I don't really know what I would suggest. Maybe make these games free to play, maybe make FIFA free to play, and have these microtransactions, because I feel like it's better in that way to make it free to play than make it a $60 product and then putting the microtransactions on it. So if microtransactions simply are the future, maybe they should just take the mobile game model and make it into the console games, right?
Could be. We'll see how that shakes out. So let's move on here. This is just a quick story here. This is, again, from Game Informer Imran Khan. Activision sees value in more remasters and new games in those series. Not going to read the whole thing, but it looks like there was an earnings call with Activision's Rob Kostich. I always mess that guy's name up. I'm really bad at names, if you guys can't tell. On this earnings call, I'm just going to call him Bobby, because that's what I often hear him referred to as. Bobby says, quote, "When you look at our IP library, we think there's a lot of IP in there the fans are going to want to experience again. I'd say stay tuned for some future announcements, but just beyond pure remasters, there are also a lot of opportunities now to innovate and think about totally new content within these IPs." So I think at the end of the day, that's basically saying, hey, you're probably going to get a new Crash, you're probably going to get a new Spyro, which is not surprising. Out of those two, I mean, what do you think you'd rather see, a new Crash or a new Spyro?
I'd rather see a new Spyro, but I believe it would be amazing if the PS5 launched with a new Crash Bandicoot.
That'd be perfect, right? Would it be exclusive, though? I don't know if it would be.
I don't know. Maybe PlayStation could pay for that, but I think it'd be really cool to have a title like that on PlayStation, because it has such a history on that platform.
Yeah, that's true. It's just because the Crash Team Racing and the Insane Trilogy came out on Xbox as well, so I don't know that that would be exclusive, but I am with you. I think that would be a system seller for sure.
Yeah.
Now, are there any other Activision games you'd like to see either remasters for or continuations? Well,
Josh said that he'd like to see new Tony Hawk Pro Skater game, but like a remake of like 2, which would be great. Like, I know they had the HD version on the Xbox 360, but like maybe the entire overhaul of that.
I just don't know that would ever happen due to the music and the likenesses of the characters, you know, because they're real people and stuff. I don't think that would ever happen, man. Especially after the poor sales of Tony Hawk's. Was that Pro Skater 5 that came out a few years ago?
That was fucking awful. That was an awful
one. Well, true, but maybe from Activision's point of view, they might say, oh, the game, it didn't sell well because people don't like Tony Hawk. Not because it was bad, but because they don't like Tony Hawk and it's not worth our time. So I don't know that we would ever see another Activision, or, you know, another Tony Hawk remake, remaster, sequel, at least not for a very long time.
How about Guitar Hero? Because I know that's one of your loves, right?
Same thing, actually. I just, after the failure of Rock Band 4 and Guitar Hero Live, I just don't think, I don't think so. I mean, obviously, I would love...
You think it's dead?
Yeah, oh yeah. I would love to see that. And I have Clone Hero, honestly, so I don't really need a new Guitar Hero. The engine on Clone Hero, I know this is like really nerdy. Most people probably don't care about this, but the engine on Clone Hero is perfect. Any song you would ever want is free. The game's free. There's just no reason for me to buy a new Guitar Hero game.
Right.
I don't think there's any reason for Activision to you know, publish another one. So
what would you like to see?
Oh God. Off the top of my head, I mean, what are some active? I don't know. I can't really think of anything. Some Activision games that maybe I would like to see. I mean, the first ones that come to mind, Spyro Crash, you know?
Yeah.
Let's see. Activision games. I'm Googling. You can edit this out if you want or not. I don't care. Let's see.
I'm going to do it, too.
Let's see.
Call of Duty. Okay.
Hey, they have this game called Call of Duty. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah. Never. No.
Oh, you know, they published some of these James Bond games. There's a couple good ones in there. I guess I'm not really too wild about Activision, I think, is what I'm learning right now. Not really anything.
Yeah, I think an interesting remake would probably be Pitfall or something like that. Something like from the real classic days coming back for modern systems with a new idea. I'd like to see like a Pitfall game that's like an Uncharted or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's that void right now that's been left by Uncharted, where like I'd love to see a third person action adventure game again.
That could be interesting. Yeah. One thing I'm looking at here as well is they do a lot of licensed stuff. Like,
yes, they do.
Goodness gracious, I did not know how. I mean, I'd say probably most of Activision's games are licensed. I mean, Family Guy, Fantastic Four, Fast and the Furious. These are. I mean, that's kind of a remake or a remaster nightmare because of obvious reasons. Ghostbusters. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not really crazy about... I guess Guitar Hero. I'll just say Guitar Hero because I love that so much. Oh, Gun. That game Gun. Do you remember that? With the... It was like a...
Nope.
like, what was that? Like Red Dead? It was kind of like Red Dead. Like a cowboy. Yeah. Although with Red Dead, I don't know that that game would do well. Yeah, I don't care about Activision.
Prototype series?
Yeah, Prototype. That'd be fine. Maybe a new Prototype.
I honestly think the Activision's kind of like THQ before it closed down, right? It's running out of its own IPs, and it was focusing mainly on the licensed products, right? So it hasn't really got that many properties under its belt to really use. Call of Duty, you know, is still the cash cow, but many of its other IPs have kind of gone down the wayside, right?
So yeah.
Skylanders,
oh,
or Guitar Hero,
yeah,
Tony Hawk, things like that. Like, they need to work on new stuff, I think.
Right.
And Destiny's gone now from their publishing rights. So
that's right.
They're basically just standing on Call of Duty, Crash, and Spyro at this point. So Which I think Pitfall might be a good option for them, but other than that, you know, I don't know.
All right, next news story here. Ninja became the first Mixer streamer to reach 1 million subscribers less than a week after announcing he was ditching Twitch for Microsoft. For those who are unaware, the most famous streamer in the world, Ninja, was offered a deal for Mixer to exclusively stream through Mixer, which is a different platform. It's run by Microsoft. And he left Twitch, and you know, he signed the deal. He's now with Mixer, and it looks like he's reached 1 million subscribers in less than a week. Which I didn't know. Yeah, Ninja. Yeah, the first streamer to reach him. So no other streamer has gotten to 1 million subscribers on Mixer before.
Nah.
That to me says that platform maybe isn't used as much.
It's not. No, it wasn't being used as much because Twitch is such a mindshare with streamers and gamers that, you know, like, it's tough for Mixer to really jump in, even though maybe some of its options on Mixer is kind of more interesting, like the multi-screen kind of stuff, which mm-hmm. is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. What do you think of this, Joseph?
I don't really think it's surprising. I think the thing I wanted to talk about is how, I guess, people were treating Ninja about this. I know maybe Ninja isn't the greatest person in the world. I've heard some stuff, but right, don't people dislike some of the things he does? I don't know. Anyway, outside of the context of that, I think it makes sense for him to have done this. People are kind of giving him a hard time, saying he's a sellout and all this stuff. I don't know, man. Like, I don't know how much money they offered him, but if you're running a business,
$50 million or something like that.
Yeah, if you're at a job and another job offers you a better position, like, you know, like a promotion kind of, yeah, you're gonna take it. Like, I don't think that's something to get upset with. No, not surprising. I guess my question is, I wonder if Mixer will start to see more streamers like start using it now that it's like more in the limelight and people are talking about it more.
Maybe, because I honestly think Twitch, it's really hard to stand out among the crowd. You know, there's so many people on Twitch now. It's getting kind of ridiculous. So maybe Mixer might be that way for people to really show themselves and be like a leader in that platform.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not much of a streamer person. Like, I don't really know any of the famous streamers other than Ninja, but I at least wanted to acknowledge this story because I know Ninja is so important to the industry.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on here. This is a little bit of a bigger story. Let's get some context. So this is the Take-Two Crackdown 3 leak investigation. So there was this YouTuber by the name of SupMatto. I don't know his real name.
You mean Borderlands 3?
Yeah, what did I say?
Crackdown.
Did I say Crackdown?
You did.
I don't know why I have Crackdown on the mind. Borderlands 3. Absolutely not Crackdown, because nobody really talks about that game anymore. Other than Josh. Borderlands. Thank you, Chris. SupMatto, this YouTuber, this streamer, Matt Summers, I guess his name is. He apparently had been leaking Borderlands 3 information prior to its official announcement earlier this year. There was this Twitch extension or something that people like got into and data mined it to find more information about Borderlands that he had then covered on his channel. He had been leaking information that turned out to be accurate. Anyway, last week he put out this YouTube video breaking his silence after a few weeks of no posts, basically saying that he'd been investigated by 2K and Take-Two, their parent company, for 10 months. And these two investigators came to his house and were like questioning him about his content and all this stuff.
God.
And apparently some of the things he'd been doing were illegal. Although this post I have here from Kotaku, which is really, it's a really, I think this is probably the best post about this because I covered this story at PlayStation Lifestyle and it was actually kind of hard to find all of the information. Like it seems like people were just sort of copying each other as they do, but the Kotaku report's pretty good. So you should take a look at that one. Which by the way is from Ian Walker. Apparently he'd been doing these illegal, his actions were labeled as illegal. They took down his Discord channel, you know, that had apparently been leaking things in there as well. So it was this big deal. One thing that's interesting too is when this video got posted by SupMatto, the hashtag boycott Borderlands 3 started trending in his defense, because everybody was saying, you know, oh, he didn't do anything wrong. All of this information was public anyway, all this stuff. And Take-Two was of the mind that, you know, he was breaking copyright laws and all this stuff. I don't know that I'm educated enough with this to side one way or another. I mean, both ends seem reasonable, but I guess maybe I'm leaning more towards 2K's side with this, because, you know, leaking shit, obviously that's
people, it's not cool.
Yeah, the publisher's gonna get pissed off about that. And there was an excerpt here in this story here. Let me see if I can find it, because it kind of just goes to show. Let's see. Oh, this is from SupMatto. It reads, quote, since I've had time to reflect on the situation, I'd say excitement got the better of my judgment. So he kind of admits that, yeah, he fucked up. It was a bit of a shitty thing to do. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I hope he doesn't, like, go to jail over this or something. I don't know if it's a crime that's worth imprisoning somebody over, right? They didn't say that, but, you know, doing illegal shit, I just don't know. I don't know if he'll have a fine or what. What do you think about this, Chris?
This is different from the usual leaker, right? Because he's on YouTube, he's making money out of these reports, right? So I don't know whether or not it would be under fair use, because it's under news reporting, or if he got that information illegitimately, right? Through means of, like, hacking software or hacking stuff. I don't know.
Well, to that point,
how much do we know about this?
To that point, yeah, he actually did not do the hacking. I don't know if it's hacking. Data mining? Is that hacking? I guess not. Other people data mined, and he just, like, reported on it. That would be, I guess, no different than IGN, PlayStation Lifestyle, Kotaku reporting on a thing that happened, right? So that's what I'm saying. I don't know that I have enough information to make an assessment one way or another, but...
Same, but for me, like, that'd be definitely up to the courts, because I think... that is a form of news reporting, so maybe that would count as fair use, but I'm not entirely sure, because maybe he was working with these people to get that information illegitimately, or I think data mining is allowed because that information is already out there, but at the same time, you can't hack the software, you can't get into it, right? So I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And I think...
definitely. Complex kind of issue here.
Right, and I think that's why that hashtag was trending, because I think a lot of people were sort of in favor of that he didn't really do anything wrong with this, although he did say, you know, what was that quote, you know, it was a shitty thing to do. So I guess, I mean, he seems like he's admitting guilt a little bit, but but anyway, I think we're going to need more information on this one to make a full assessment, because I don't know that all of the pieces are in place there. But if you look around on the internet, like I said, a lot of the reports are just kind of vague. And the Kotaku one, from what I found, was like the best one. So take a look at that. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure more information will pop up for that story. Let's move on to another story here. This is a real quick one. I just wanted to cover that Red Dead Redemption has hit 25 million units sold.
Nuts.
Which is crazy. Yeah. You know what's funny though is that is a lot of units, but compared to like a GTA 5, which is what, like 110 million. It's just, I don't know. Does that mean that Red Dead's not successful, or does that mean that GTA?
Oh, it's definitely successful.
Does that just mean GTA just... is an anomaly? Well, I can't fucking say that word. Anomaly? Anomaly?
Anomaly. Yeah,
anomaly.
Anomaly.
Anomaly. God damn it.
God word. Damn it. You forget to open your LaCroix properly, and then you forget to say, like, anomaly?
Anomaly.
What's going on, man?
That's, yeah. No, I messed that word up a few episodes ago. Josh helped me with it. Because I don't know how to fucking talk. Right. Anyway, Chris, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But so I honestly think that most of those sales from GTA is mainly because of the online scene and the Twitch and the YouTube kind of influence over that. You know, people making new videos about GTA Online and attracting new people. So I think that's the reason why GTA 5 is so popular right now. Mm-hmm. As well as the name recognition and it being in stores for, like, super cheap or whatever.
But
Yeah, like, this is a big story, I think, because, you know, this is a triumph for like single player gamers and those who want to explore like big visceral worlds. You know, like it's a big win for them.
Yeah, and we'll get to this on what we've been playing, but I just jumped into Red Dead 2 for the first time in a few months, and man,
yeah,
that's a really good video game. I know, mm-hmm. I know a lot of people don't like it, but in terms of like the way it's made,
I'm not a fan.
I mean, I get it. Yeah, but I think that's a notable amount. And what's interesting, I've got this story from PlayStation Lifestyle. This is from Brianna Reeves. They sold 1 million copies since May, which may not sound like a lot, but what is that? Let's see, June, July, August. In 3 months, 1 million copies. That's, you know, almost a year. Well, let's see, it came out in October. I mean, most of the game's sales are going to be within the first month. Right.
Yeah.
So I think 1 million copies sold since May is a pretty staggering amount. But yeah, congratulations to Rockstar. I don't know what the future looks like for Red Dead, because obviously the online isn't going to have the legs that a GTA would. In fact, I don't.
I think we're going to get single player story stuff.
Oh no.
Again.
Oh, I disagree.
I think we're gonna get like Undead Nightmare and stuff.
Maybe Undead. Yeah, I don't really consider that single player, though, because that's got multiplayer in it, right?
Is it okay?
I think
that's how much I know about Red Dead and Rockstar Games.
Maybe I can't really remember. I think that had multiplayer in it, but right. But the reason I say I don't know that they would just go exclusively the single player route is because of GTA. I mean, they never did put out single player content for that, and look how much money it's made them. So I don't know because making single player content is really time intensive and resource intensive. I feel like just making more multiplayer stuff would probably be better in terms of money. So anyway, congratulations to Rockstar. I really like that game a lot. I get why people don't like it, but I think it's an important game, and at least from a design perspective, it's really, really interesting. All right, a couple more stories here. This is the Call of Duty story of the week, which it seems like every week there's a new controversial thing.
Call of Duty, bro.
Yeah. Let's see. Infinity Ward doesn't consider Call of Duty Modern Warfare a political game. So Game Informer did their rapid-fire interview questions with Infinity Ward. Who did they interview? Let's see. They interviewed, what the hell was that guy's name? I don't know. I have to see. I don't fucking know. Oh, Joel Emsley. He's the studio art director. And what's interesting about these interview questions through Game Informer is that a lot of the questions are ones that you would care about, and they're good questions. But some of them are like more funny questions, and the overall tone of the interview is more comedic, I think. And so there was a question in which Joel Emsley was asked, is Call of Duty Modern Warfare political? And Emsley replied very quickly with a no. And the interviewer was like, really? And then he said no. And then the interviewer said, that's insane to me. And Emsley said something to the effect of, well, it's insane to me that people would think it's political. We're just trying to make a game. I don't know. One thing that I think is worth noting with this is that I feel like these companies have – well, a couple things. These companies, number one, have – like they take a look at the questions beforehand, and they get approval from PR with not only which ones they can answer but what they can say, like what their answers will be. So maybe – Maybe Emsley's response is not actually what he thinks. It might be something that PR told him to say. So that's worth noting. But also, these companies' definition of what political is may be influencing how they answer this question, because, you know, political has a specific definition. You know, the word politics, political, has a specific definition that maybe not everybody uses it the same way. I don't know. So that could be it too. But outside of the context of semantics, which I love to get hung up on, it's kind of a silly thing. Like, it's a game about war, and like people die, and it's like really intense, and obviously all the controversy over the violence and stuff. I don't see how one can say that it's not political. But I'm not the best person to ask about it. I don't know. Josh, or Jesus, Chris. I'm used to Josh.
But... Well, Josh is the most political guy out of all
of us. Actually, so that may be what that was.
It's kind of sad that he's not here this week, actually, about
yeah,
this.
He loves his politics. Chris, what do you think?
But, for me, I think they're just trying to make a game. And because of its popularity in Call of Duty, in the mind space of many people around the world, it's generally considered political because, you know, it's trying to make a message, I guess. That's typically what people are thinking, mm-hmm. because it's just such a big symbol of our gaming industry. But at the same time, like, these political biases can seep into a storyline, you know, people, the writer's biases can go into it without them even knowing, right? So, I don't know, just it's an interesting kind of thought. I think games can be political, they can be thought-provoking, and they can bring a certain side of the story or a point of view that people want to come across to bring up, like. It's just an interesting fall.
Yeah, while you were talking, I pulled up the definition of politics. No, not ranting. I pulled up the definition of politics. Here's what maybe this is necessary, maybe not. Let's see. Politics, the activities associated with the governance of a country or other area, especially the debate or conflict among individuals or parties having or hoping to achieve power. Well, I mean,
I disagree.
You disagree with that definition?
Well, I do think it's. I don't think it's political. Then, I do agree with Infinity Ward of that. Then, like, because they're not trying to get make the government govern in a certain way, right? So
especially the debate or conflict among individuals or parties. So okay, how about this, let's take this as a quick example. What if two people are fighting, like just literally like beating the shit out of each other? Isn't that a debate or conflict among individuals hoping to achieve power? Or am I hung up on, well, the whole game you're shooting people and they're shooting at you. So isn't that political? Yeah. Or am I wrong?
I don't know.
See, that's what I'm saying. This definition of politics. This definition here. I mean, we can find another one. Let's see. Let's do. What was it? Webster? Merriam-Webster. Let's see. Let's see what this says. Politics. All right. The art or science of government. That's not really the art or science.
Yeah. That is so general. Like,
it is a thing that has happened. I'm not really wild about these definitions because they're so vague.
No.
Political affair. See, that's the thing. We need to define politics. All right. Anyway, I think we've gone long enough on this topic. But nonetheless, people...
Yeah, it's above our pay grade.
People's panties were in a bunch. Let's just put it that way. Okay. Yeah. Last story. Then we'll do some questions. Talk about what we've been playing. All right, so after the horrific mass shootings in the United States last week, I'm sure everybody has heard, whether you're in the video game community or not, that the politicians of the U.S. have been deeming video games to be one of the leading causes of these horrific events, violent video games. And so some, I guess... some people have been taking action with this, that kind of thing. Walmart had apparently at one point been instructed to take down all signage in their stores advertising violent video games following the horrific mass shootings. I know there was another story, we don't have this on the run of show, but there was this Apex Legends tournament that was supposed to be broadcasted on ESPN, but was pushed to a later date, you know, out of respect to these people, which, you know, that's a nice thought. I just don't know that, obviously. You know,
but the point that Jim Sterling made, though, yesterday, is that there's mass shootings every day. So what are you doing? Are you are you showing disrespect to the people that die, like, on in October, you know? Like, when does it stop?
That's a good point. Like, oh, it's okay to show it in October, just not right now. Like, what? Like, why is that okay? But anyway, so Walmart, yeah, they had taken down the signage, and then there were reports later that they had been instructed to pull all violent video games from store shelves, which apparently was not true. There was maybe just like a handful of stores that were doing this, and I think it might be like a store by store basis, depending on management, kind of a thing.
That's what I think. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, somebody tweeted out this picture. This is from Tyler May Cry. He says, "Mine is not even selling the games anymore temporarily, and I'm seriously upset. Like, where am I supposed to buy a physical copy now? The nearest GameStop is way too far away from me." And he's posted this picture, and it was just empty. The you know, like the Walmart, they have their cabinets that you know, the sliding doors and everything, just empty. Like, where all you can see where all these games normally would be, and nothing. But it turns out that that's not true. IGN got into contact with Walmart PR, and it turns out that they are still going to continue to sell these games. Now, yeah, I mean, looking at sort of broader picture, and like you said with Jim Sterling, like, I mean, this is just ridiculous. Like, what? There's like evidence to support, right, that violent video games don't cause mass shootings, and I love how I think it was the ESA put that, you know, almost you know, every country in the world plays video games. Only one country in the world has a shooting problem. Like, it's just how many times we need to beat this drum, right? Like,
it's ridiculous.
And I think from the point of view of Walmart not carrying the games and stuff, I mean, yeah, somebody would just then go buy it elsewhere. Like, I just don't know that would even solve the problem. Like, maybe, yeah, from Walmart's point of view, they're doing the right thing, quote unquote, whatever, but people are still going to get their hands on a violent video game, and it doesn't even matter ultimately anyway, because it's stupid.
It's honestly the biggest problem right now of the states is the cowardice of the Republicans not passing through these gun laws, them shifting the blame to these video games or mental health, and you know, mental health is an issue, but you know, like, it's just such a so cowardly to not face these things, not take the money. You know, they're taking the money from NRA and all these rifle associations. They don't want to do anything about it because all they care about are their own wallets, and it's disgusting, it's disgraceful, and I hope something is actually done about this rather than shifting the blame constantly and just praying for anything to stop, for this to stop, right? Because it's not, because you're not doing anything about it, and that's the big issue. That is not video games, it's them.
I don't really have anything else to add. I think that's beautifully said, Chris. So cool. Well, not cool, I guess, but
I'm saying it's a distinctly American issue. I'm not American myself, so maybe this is a little rich to say, but like, it's the American culture. It's their love of guns and their relationship with guns, and I don't know, it's just a societal problem that won't go away and needs to be faced, but no one wants to face it. No one wants to take it on because they just want to shift the blame.
I think our younger generation here, who maybe didn't vote last time, might be more inclined to vote this
they
time.
Should.
And we'll see maybe if that changes. So, yeah, horrible stuff. Really, as a gamer, as a lover of games, as a reporter of games, as somebody who's involved in the industry and it's my job, it's just horrible to see it, you know, the industry treated like this. All right, well, on that horrible note, let's take a little break, and we'll move on to some listener questions. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, we are back. Let's take some listener questions. You all right over there,
Chris? I'm good.
Okay. Just you had like a sigh.
Cooling down from that debate over there. Just back.
Yeah. Well, no, it wasn't a debate. I wasn't arguing.
It wasn't a debate at all. No, exactly. Yeah, it's just a discussion about video games and
heated,
you know,
yes.
Just the whole, you know, just the heated stuff that's going on over there. It's just like, whew.
So, well, let's unwind.
Let's cool down with some listener questions.
Let's unwind, yeah, with some listener questions. Okay, so as Josh is not on the show this week, he decided to throw some interesting questions at us. So he says, hey, long-time listener but first-time caller. Great. What's Joseph's favorite survival horror game? Oh, man. Yeah, I'm going to go Resident Evil 2, man. I know that's not the hipster answer that people may want, or it's not the, you know, whatever, like, purist answer. But Resident Evil 2, man, I really do think that's, like one of the best survival horror games out there. Dead Space is also really good. Can you do a survival horror-themed episode? Yeah, I think we can. Maybe on, like, an off week or something like that. Chris mentioned he loved Kingdom Hearts 3, but didn't love it as much as he thought he would. Does he still want Kingdom Hearts 4? Chris.
Fuck yes.
Yeah.
Fuck yes. I really want to see Kingdom Hearts 4, see what they can evolve in the series, and maybe choose a mix of, like, older and newer Disney worlds. And I'm just, like, from the secret movie that they released for Kingdom Hearts 3, with Kingdom Hearts 3, that it seems very interesting, the direction they're going to take with the series. And maybe it'd be a bit darker. We'll see. So
and
I'm kind of interested to see that.
Yeah. And what were your issues with Kingdom Hearts 3? Like, he said that you mentioned you didn't love it as much as you thought you would.
Yeah, some of the story issues, like the lack of use for Kairi. She was once again the damsel in distress, so that was a bit of an issue there. The Disney worlds weren't as interesting as earlier, and they weren't as important to the story as previous games.
Mm.
And I don't know, the combat, like, the difficulty was so easy, it was just it kind of ruins, like, the ending of the saga, because, like, the end boss was just just so easy to go through, and it didn't bring that gravitas that people were looking for the conclusion of this 13 year story.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
And then Josh asks, why is Josh so handsome? Like, he sounds really, really handsome. Is he? What's his secret? Josh is very handsome. I'll give you that. He's got a nice haircut as well. Why is he so handsome? Might be that haircut. I don't know. I'm not one to really comment on haircuts, though, since mine is so interesting. But, yeah, let's move on. All right, this is another one from... Grace, oh, it threw me off because he changed his Twitter name to Galarian Grayson, and I'm like, wait, is his name? I'm like, is his name Galarian? Oh fuck, I've been calling him Grayson this whole time. No, it's Grayson. He is features editor over at Twinfinite. He asks, who's the best Pokemon? This sucks, man. I hate this question because,
mm-hmm.
What do you mean, who's the best Pokemon? Who?
I'm boring.
Who's
my favorite Pokemon's Pikachu.
Yeah,
absolutely, but... Pikachu. He's so cute. He's so adorable.
He is,
And he kicks ass as well. So Pikachu. Is
and I, from what I understand, in Smash, he's very, very overpowered. Is that true?
I don't know. Maybe
I've heard that.
I'm not particularly sure.
Grayson, I don't know what you mean. Who's the best Pokemon? What do you mean? Who's the best? Who's my favorite? Or who's, like, literally the best? Like, who's the most powerful? If it's who's the most powerful, I don't know. Like one of those legendary.
Mewtwo?
Yeah, Mewtwo. I don't know. Like. One of the fucking badass ones, like the legendary ones. I don't know who, or what is it? Mega evolutions. Who's the best looking? I kind of like the ice cream Pokemon. What's that thing called? There's an ice cream Pokemon.
I don't know. that's a generation Pokemon. I have no idea about.
What the hell's that ice cream Pokemon called? Here, I have to look this up. Ice cream.
Well,
Pokemon.
That's a controversial pick. My God.
Pokemon. Well, he wasn't clear. Let's see. Vanillite. Vanillite.
Vanillite.
Of course, Vanillite is his name. Okay. Yeah, a Vanillite I really like, Grayson. But if you're going off of, like, okay, let me pull up my Pokemon Go. If, like, are you asking...
Charmander would be a second for me.
Charmander's great, yeah.
Yeah.
Grayson, you were unclear. I don't know what you mean when you say best Pokemon. I'm so sorry. You asked just best. That's all he said was best. Let's see. In my Pokemon Go... Oh, I'm very much attached to my Gyarados. That's the highest combat power Pokemon I have. And this Gyarados kicks ass. There's this Pokestop, or this gym by my house, and I always drop him off there. And he always comes back with 50 coins. He's always My tried and true, trusty Gyarados. So, yeah, I'll go either Gyarados or this fucking ice cream mon. What's it called? Vanillite. So that's my answer, Grayson. and just as a quick aside, Brendan Groom responded to this and he said, I mean, probably Galarian wheezing at this point. And then he makes the, like, that grimace
yeah,
face.
The top hat. Yes.
yes, okay,
it's great. Mustache and the top hat is amazing. If you haven't seen Galarian wheezing yet, check it out because it's hilarious.
No, I haven't. Here, I'll pull up a picture of that.
Yeah, okay. It's great.
Galarian wheezing. Let's take a look. Galarian. Oh God, how do I internet? That is definitely horrific. It looks like something somebody would smoke out of. Doesn't that look like something somebody would smoke out of? I don't do that.
No. Maybe
it looks like a like a smoking device. Okay, anyway, let's move on here. Brendan Groom asks, how do loot boxes affect you personally? Do you care if they are in a game, or does it only matter if it's loot boxes that contain items other than cosmetics? All right, this is kind of a big question. How do they affect me personally? Not really, because I don't buy them. the closest thing I ever came to that was in like Guitar Hero and stuff, where you could buy extra songs, but that's not really a loot box because you know what you're getting. I guess I did buy some loot boxes in the Call of Duty Modern Warfare remaster, but I wasn't like upset about it. I don't know. I bought the loot boxes. I got an item and I'm like, cool, I have an item now. Yay. Do you only care if they're in a game, or does it only matter if it's loot boxes that contain items other than cosmetics? Yeah, in this case, it was items you could use, like weapons and stuff, but they weren't... See, the thing is that the weapons were... like, one of the items I got was this, like, pickaxe, which the pickaxe doesn't do any more damage than the knife does. So I guess technically, really, it was cosmetic. So I think maybe that's the key. Chris, how do you... What's your answer on this question?
Here's my answer, right? As long as the loot boxes don't affect the balance of the game, then they're great. Well, not great, they're fine. I like them for cosmetics, and sometimes that encourages me to play more of Overwatch or more of a particular multiplayer game because I want to get the best skins, the best cosmetics kind of stuff. But like, for example, for like Middle Earth,
Middle
Earth game. I can't remember what it's called.
Shadow of War, I think, or Mordor, one of them.
Yeah. Shadow of War, yeah. And then Star Wars Battlefront 2, that affected the gameplay too much. And I don't particularly like those forms of loot boxes that change up like the progression system or anything like
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I do think loot boxes can be good. Let's expand it to microtransactions. So with microtransactions, I think they sometimes can be good because they give options to people for, you know, if they want to level up a bit quicker and want to get through the game faster, you know, that's on them, right? So I think it's good to give that option, I guess, but it just depends on the game whether or not the loot boxes and the microtransactions can really affect it, so affect my enjoyment of the game.
Sure. Now, it's important to note too the difference between a single player and a multiplayer version of this, because in a multiplayer context, I think you can basically only do it if it's cosmetic. With the single player game, you maybe do have a little bit more freedom there to experiment because obviously, you know, there are no other players you're affecting, but even still, you don't want to be able to just buy the strongest item in the game and just like plow through it. So there's a smart way to do it. But I think to answer your first question, how do loot boxes affect you personally? Not at all, because I don't really participate in
them. I don't buy them too much either. I actually think they're kind of a positive for me because they make me want to play the game more and check it out more. And it's like I kind of enjoy Overwatch more because of the loot boxes in there. But... yeah, like if it really impacts someone I know, or if they're super addicted to a game because of the loot boxes, then I'd probably be upset with them. But as of right now, I don't think I know anyone who's obsessed with a game to the point of like it messing up their lives or, you know, stuff like that.
Right. All right, last...
that's a real thing. That's a real thing. But
yeah, you know, I have heard of that. I have heard of that. All right, last question. This one's a little weird. Chris didn't want to do it, but I don't know. Let's see. Alex on Twitter asks, "Does Mario fuck?" Like, does he get the princess in the end, or is it a constant sissy fusion torture scenario? Does he fuck? Who oh Jesus Christ. Who is Baby Mario? Isn't Baby Mario Mario's son?
Nah, it's just a baby version of Mario that's been in, like, the Yoshi's Island games, I think.
So what is that, time traveling? Is there time traveling involved?
I think so.
Does Mario fuck? I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. Why you gotta ask? I don't know, man. Does he fuck? No, probably not.
No.
Can he? Does he have the ability to fuck? I would say he has the ability to fuck. Like, he's got all the parts and stuff.
Does he? I don't know.
Man, I've seen some shit. Against my will, I've seen some shit.
Oh no! Just look it up on Pornhub. Then you'll know.
Or like the Sonic. You know, Sonic obviously has a whole fucking. Does he get the princess in the end? He gets the princess in the end. But like you said, it's a constant sissy fusion torture scenario. Is that how you say that word, sissy fusion?
I think so.
Yeah, where he's just constantly. I would love to see a Mario game where it's not him trying to rescue the princess. Kind of like Majora's Mask with Zelda, where it's not him trying to rescue the princess. Because, I mean, how many times? That's what was cool about that. Well, there was a Peach game on the DS where you play as Peach instead of you.
Yeah, Super Princess Peach. Yeah, and you're trying to save Mario.
Oh, is that what it was? You're Peach saving Mario? I think so. Oh, okay.
I believe so.
Yeah, so does Mario fuck? Probably not. Can he fuck? Yeah. I don't know. All right. On that horrific note.
Let's move on.
Thank you, Alex, for the question. All right. Let's talk about what we've been playing, Chris. Now, like I mentioned at the top of the show, some interesting games, as you mentioned, badass games between the two of us. Let me toss it over to you first. What have you got?
Okay. I finished Devil May Cry 5 in like 3 days.
Yeah, man. That game.
Yeah,
it'll do it to you. That's a banger. Go ahead.
That's an amazing game. You're indeed right. That is a banger. I really like the characters. This is something that Devil May Cry 5 got right, and not Kingdom Hearts 3, is that it recapped the series pretty well. I think, like, I got the general idea of what was happening, and the sibling rivalry between Dante and Virgil, you know, and the, like, the few twists and turns they take with Devil May Cry 5, and I guess Devil May Cry in itself is a bit more simple, I guess, in story than Kingdom Hearts series.
I'd say probably anything ever is more simple.
True. Yeah.
So.
But yeah, I loved my time with Devil May Cry 5. I liked doing the different combos, unlocking new moves, and the visuals are absolutely stunning. Like, the particle effects and what's going on around you, and it's just so amazing. And like something I really liked, and I wish they did more of this actually, is like seeing people around you playing as the different characters in the same time frame. Like, basically what happens is that it connects you to people online in a way like Journey, where the players kind of like emerge around you as the story's progressing, and you can see them fighting alongside you in a different room. But I'd love to see like a point in the game where you're actually fighting with humans around the world rather than the computer, right? So that would be great to see in like Devil May Cry 5, 6 or something. And I like the way they end Devil May Cry 5, and how the promising kind of future the series has now with it. So
Right.
I really loved my time with the game, and I loved the different mechanics put into the game. And I think what makes it feel fresh throughout the whole game is that it changes characters with you. So you're playing as Dante, you're playing as V, and
Nero
as well. Yeah. So, yeah, I absolutely loved my time with the game. And yeah, I can't wait for the next one now. So I can't believe now that I'm kind of a Capcom fan now. So I wouldn't have known that, like, last year, you know, if right. you told me that, I was like, what? No, of course not. But no, like, I'm definitely a fan of Capcom now after these last few games. So yeah.
So yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head with that. I think the variety in Devil May Cry 5 is probably its strength. It's one of its biggest strengths. I reviewed it for PlayStation Lifestyle, and that was, I think, my headline, something about the variety. Yeah. Really cool. Now, you mentioned something about this other player thing. I don't really remember that. So I had the game early before other people did, so maybe that's why I didn't experience it. What you said, like, it's kind of like Dark Souls, right? Where, like, there are other people...
No, it's kind of like Journey, where there's, like, other people joining your game. Basically, it says on the left-hand side, starring so-and-so as the different characters, and, like, it comes up with the player names on it.
But do you see their character model in the game with you?
Yes. Yeah, you see them fighting enemies around you.
I don't remember that.
Which is really cool. And I don't think, honestly, they've used that enough, because it was hard to see them actually fighting, but you could definitely see them in the background, like, fighting against a few enemies, which was a really cool touch, and I hope they bring that more in further detail on in the next game, because I think that was such a cool addition.
Do they affect the enemies in your world, or is it just a visual?
No, they don't. It's just a visual kind of thing where you see them in the background just fighting. So okay. I'd like to see that actually make an impact on the gameplay, you know? So, it's a shame you weren't able to experience that.
I think I missed out on that.
You should replay it.
Because
it says, because if it can't connect you to a few people online, it just says the DMC crew or whatever. DMC5 crew, and that's just the AI.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably why you didn't even notice that, because you can connect to people online.
Yeah, because I think all of my time with that game was spent before it came out. So by the time it came out, right. I'd already moved on. Yeah, I'd like to jump back into that. Huh. What else have you been playing, Chris?
So I tried out Anthem again. I tried out the Cataclysm kind of thing just briefly.
Oh, that finally came out? I forgot about that.
I think it came out, yeah. And I tried the first mission of it, and it just reminded me why Anthem's just not the greatest game of this year. You know, it's such a failure, because the characters are so boring, and the voice acting, it just sounds like they just don't give a shit about, you know, the game, and they're just here just for a paycheck, you know?
What do you think is going to happen with that game?
I think it's going to die, and that's unfortunate, because I love the combat. I absolutely love the combat. I think it's great. I love how fast it is. I love how you're flying through the sky, and the weapons feel great, and I like the abilities that are involved with the combat. So it's just a shame that this combat system has gone to waste in such a boring, dull game with an even duller storyline.
Mm-hmm. That's a shame. I never tried it, so I don't really have anything to contribute to the conversation, but I don't think it's controversial to say that this game did not do as well as EA had hoped, right?
So. It's such a shame, because there's a good game in there, but it's just the game design of it, the repetition of, like, oh, you gotta fight these waves to protect a certain part of the map or an item or something. That's basically what you're doing all the time, and it's just so boring. So I hope they go back to the drawing board or something and try to come up with some more gameplay mechanics, because, like, yeah, it's just rough. It's super rough.
What else have you been playing, Chris?
Nothing too much more to say really about these two, but Assassin's Creed Odyssey. I've been diving more into Cassandra's story, and I love the character. And I tried to play Assassin's Creed Odyssey straight after Devil May Cry 5, and just the combat feels so so boring in comparison. So I might have to give Assassin's Creed Odyssey a little bit of a break until I cleanse my Devil May Cry 5 love.
Isn't it funny how that works? I mean,
it's weird.
The order in which you play games will affect how you enjoy the next one.
Oh yeah, I wish I played Assassin's Creed Odyssey first, but Devil May Cry 5, man, what a game. And then something else I also wanted to mention about Assassin's Creed Odyssey is that it's the first time this generation where I'm like, it's starting to feel old. Like the textures and the graphics, they look washed out, you know, and I'm just not as into the game as I would usually. So that was just the thing that kind of caught me by surprise. I was like, maybe with the PS5 we can get more better visuals and stuff, but I think that's something I've just realized with my new 4K TV. I was like, oh man, okay. And then Sniper Elite Boar I played as well.
That was the PS Plus game, right?
Yeah, it's the PS Plus game this week, this month, I mean. And it's a fine game. The sniping's great. It feels excellent just to pierce your bullets right through the enemy. Like, you can see that there's this X-ray kind of vision that you see of the lung being pierced, or the head being pierced, or whatever. And it's really cool.
It almost reminds me of it reminds me of like Mortal Kombat sometimes. Oh,
for sure.
Just in how disgusting it is.
It's definitely disgusting. The sound design is excellent for this game, but overall I don't like the open world design of it, and I feel like enemies can see you too quickly, because like it's a stealthy game, right? You're a sniper, and for me, like, I don't think there's enough options, especially towards the beginning of the game, to muzzle out your bullets. So, like, as soon as you fire a shot, people are going to recognize you, right, and see you. So, that's the reason why I found it a bit difficult to play. Is like, what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to be really enjoying this, like, sniper kind of, like, stealth experience, but I keep getting seen by all these people, so I might be doing something wrong, or it might not have explained to me certain aspects of the game, like, or maybe I'm supposed to shoot during a time where there's, like, a lot of noise around, like, there's planes going over the map, so maybe I'm supposed to wait for the planes to go and then shoot, but I just haven't been enjoying my experience of the game so far.
That was my problem with whichever one came out on the Switch a few months ago. I felt like, the whole game you're supposed to snipe, but there would often be enemies, like, running towards me, like, a lot of them, and I would have to use the non-sniper weapon, you know, the machine gun and all that, and it just doesn't
feel good. It's against the point of the game.
Yeah. All right, let me touch on what I've been playing, and then we'll say goodbye for the day. I've also been playing a PlayStation Plus game. I've been playing Wipeout Omega Collection. Man, that game is something else. For those who aren't familiar with the Wipeout games, they're like arcade-style, like, futuristic racing games, but they're like really, really stylized, and this like thumping soundtrack goes on while you're playing, and it's just so over the top and like futuristic looking, you know. And you can play the whole thing in VR, which I highly recommend for those who have a VR unit, a PSVR unit. Definitely play Wipeout in VR, man. It is up. It's like, I think in my top three PSVR games.
Doesn't it make you feel nauseous though? Like,
no,
a game
no.
like that has a lot of action in it. Like, that's surprising. Really? No.
Yeah, not at all, actually. I don't get motion sickness. I guess I'm very fortunate with that. But I know a lot of people with like first person games and stuff in VR, they get real sick over. But yeah, I mean, in Wipeout, you like go upside down and stuff at times. It's like a roller coaster almost. But it's very skill based. Like, it's not like on rails or whatever where you just hold a button and that's it.
Yeah.
You have to use the bumpers, and there are like weapons and stuff that you have to attack other vehicles. Very, very skill based, very tough. I'm not good at it, but yeah, no, I don't get sick with it. But if you guys have a PSVR unit, You have no excuse to not play this. It's free on PlayStation Plus. Check it out. With Josh's coverage of Red Dead Redemption 2, it sort of got me thinking about how much I missed that game, so I jumped back in it, and man, that game is so fun in terms of its, like, immersion. Sometimes I do want to play a Devil May Cry where it's just fast and you're just hacking up enemies and it's just, you don't have to think too hard about it, but yeah, you're just, you know, whacking away at enemies. But other times I want, like, a really, really immersive, like, almost like role-playing sort of experience where I'm in the Wild West. I have to clean my guns. I have to, hunt for food. Like, I kind of like that. It's a good balance. And so with Red Dead, I mean, you know, there's not really a whole lot much else to say on it because that game's been covered to death. But really, really awesome. And again, I get why people don't like it because it's very slow. But if you're in the mood for a... All right. If you're in the mood for like a really immersive Wild West kind of game, man, I don't think there's anything better than Red Dead. But the main one I wanted to touch on, Metro Exodus. I know last week I think I said I started to play it, but then I turned it off because it just wasn't in the mood. This week I gave it another try, and that's one of the great games of the year, I've got to say.
Really?
Yeah. It's one that I feel like has not gotten a whole lot of coverage. Oh man, this is funny. Sorry. My cats are sitting next to each other, and the one cat is about to attack the other cat, and the one doesn't know. Let's see what happens. Okay, nothing happened. They decided against it. Okay, I thought something was going to happen. Anyway.
Oh, right. That sounds exactly like Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yeah, with all the cats and everything, right?
Okay, I'm just kidding.
Just kitten? Is that what you just said? Fucking goddamn it.
Just kidding. Oh my god.
Fuck.
Okay. All right. I wish I said that now.
But Metro Exodus, it's, think, a mix between Far Cry, Fallout, and Bioshock. So yeah, that's a weird combo, I know. It's open world-ish. It's open world, I would say. Not as big as something like a Red Dead or a Far Cry, but yeah. But it's got like horror elements to it, which is where the Bioshock aspects come into play. But my favorite thing about it is how they intertwine or how they interweave the story in with the game. So in a lot of games, it's gameplay, cutscene, and it's very segmented, and it makes it really easy for someone who doesn't normally get invested into the story to just skip the cutscenes and never care, right? But in these games like Wolfenstein or, you know, these other, you know, Bioshock, these like cinematic first-person shooters, that they do a really good job of, you know, they never cut to a cutscene. All of the narrative is in, it's like in engine and all that, and it's really easy to get immersed in that. And that's how it is in Metro, where, you know, you stop and talk to a character, and it looks really good, and it's almost like a cutscene, whatever, you know. But since they never break away, it always like keeps you immersed into it. And so the story, it's, you know, nothing wild. It's just, so far I'm only a couple hours in, but, you know, it's a group of people who are sort of stuck, and there's this train or whatever that they're trying to get to move, and they're like stuck there. And so the main character has to go out and like find resources, that kind of thing. It's like I said, nothing too wild, but I'm already starting to care about these characters. And I think you're somebody, Chris, who loves narrative in games. It's like, you know, one of your primary things you focus on. I think this game might be for you, assuming that you're into the Far Cry sort of gameplay where you explore the open world, loot area, like, you know, loot these shacks and upgrade your weapons, that kind of thing. Another point about this game is that it has a lot of aspects of realism. It's almost similar to like a Red Dead, where it may be even like too slow for some people. This game's very slow paced. It's the opposite of Doom or Wolfenstein, where, you know, you could sprint across the map, but enemies will see you. It's not really recommended to do it that way. There are these areas where there's like nuclear waste, I think, and you have to put on a gas mask. But sometimes your gas mask will get foggy, and you have to like wipe off your mask. Or if you're wearing a mask and you get shot at, the mask will get cracked, and you have to go get it repaired. Your weapons will sort of deteriorate and need to be cleaned. all these things. And the other day I was playing and I was like, I saw these like mutant monster things. I don't really know what they are, but they're like sort of what, you know, what you would expect, these like zombie mutant whatever. And I was like sneaking by them and it was like the most nerve-wracking thing. And the reason I was sneaking by them is because I didn't have the ammo to kill them. So I was just like sneaking by and I got by without getting seen. And I was so, it was like so satisfying. So yeah, it's really slow paced, but again, if you're looking for like a more immersive shooter with an interesting story that's like tied to it, I think Metro is for you. And I'm gonna play through it, try to get through it before the end of the year, but I do think it's one of the great games of the year. I really do stand by that.
I think the reason why I don't think it stands out is because it's not sexy, you know. It's very slow paced. It's you know, like it's a shooter, so it probably doesn't stand out as much as anything else from a different genre. So maybe that's the reason why it hasn't had as much coverage.
Yeah.
But perhaps as like that award season comes along, you know, Game Awards and all that kind of stuff, maybe more people check it out as you know, as that prestige
right
is brought about a bit more.
It's one that I think is not going to get hardly any awards just because people skipped out on it. And I'm with you, like, in terms of its visuals, it doesn't stand out. I mean, I think it looks great. It doesn't, like, Devil May Cry, for example, that has, like, style, man. Or Wipeout.
Yeah.
Wipeout, I know Wipeout didn't come out this year, but still, Wipeout has, like, style. These games, Red Dead, you know, obviously, Rockstar, like, there are these prominent features for all these games that are doing well. But with a Metro, like, it's made by this company, 4A Games, like,
in Russia?
Yeah, like, right? Like, it's just, I don't know that it has much of a chance, but I think if you can pick it up on a sale or something, it's really, really excellent.
It's, I'm gonna take on the Josh thing. You know, it's on Xbox Game Pass, so you can just play it there. You can play it on PC Games Pass as well. So, yeah, you should play it. It's great.
That was a pretty good impression.
It's a great service, yeah.
Is it actually on Game Pass? I think it is, right?
Yeah, it's on Game Pass. Yeah.
So Metro Exodus, pretty good game.
I love Xbox.
That's your impression of Josh. Just I love Xbox. All right, I think that about wraps us up for this episode. I guess we went a little long here, but there's a lot to get through. We had some announcements.
There's a lot of deep stuff to talk about as well. So.
Yeah. Cool. So let's do some closing little things here, and then we'll say goodbye. Of course, you can find our show on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play. You can tweet at us at ActiveQuestShow. If you'd like to email us, you can do that too, activequestpodcast@gmail.com, to send us your questions. Speaking of questions, just be sure to look out for our thread on Fridays where you can submit your questions for the next episode. And then bear with us while we're working through our scheduling issues here. We all have jobs and lives outside of the show, so we're working on that.
Yeah, I think Josh had to pick up his a family member or something, so.
Yeah, today. Yeah. So we're working on getting all that worked out. Thank you guys for your patience for that. Am I missing anything? I guess.
Shout-outs.
Yes, of course. Of course. Plugs.
Plugs.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, I just had like a brain fart. I'm hungry and I have donuts in the kitchen and that's all I can think about right now. And they have sprinkles on them too. So I mean, I'm in bad shape right now.
Ooh.
Chris, where can people find you when you're not on Active Quest?
Well, I'm gonna be at a local donut shop soon, so thanks for that. But other than that, you can find me on Twitter at PenwellWrites. I've written a few things for Jack of All Controllers, so I have a opinion article about how PlayStation has lost part of its identity, so you can read that up on there. That's pretty much what's going on with me. I still need to record my VO for my interview with series with game characters, so that should be fun to do soon. I just recently moved from place to place, so that's the reason why I've been delayed on a few things, but I'm finally getting back to full swing here, so look out for me.
I'm excited to see how that turns out.
And
as for me, you can find me on Twitter at Joseph Yaden. I'm still covering news at PlayStation Lifestyle. Might have some features in the works. I just actually did a feature for PlayStation Lifestyle, covering the highest rated games of 2019 so far. Which that was interesting because there were some games I hadn't even heard of when I did that list. Huh. Like obviously you have your, you know, Resident Evil 2 and, you know,
Kingdom Hearts 3.
Kingdom Hearts 3, yeah. Yeah, all these big games that obviously would be on there. But there were some other games that I just hadn't considered. Like, we gave Trials Fusion a 9.5.
Wow.
Which I just did not expect us to do that. So anyway, you can check out that feature. And then I'll probably have something else going up this week. Other than that, that's been episode 33. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening. Thank you for bearing with the changes. And yeah, we're excited to be doing this, and we'll catch you next week for episode 34. Take care, everybody.
Bye.